William and Nisha coming to you every day talking about human resources. And today it's just going to be myself. This is Brian Wimpen, and we are going to talk to one of my favorite practitioners in the entire world. So, Janet Hoffman, welcome back to Drive-Thru HR.
Thank you, Brian. It's great to be here. And thank you for that introduction.
Well, and I actually even meant it, too. That wasn't the usual superficial, you know, spin. I actually did mean that. So,
Right back at you.
Well, if you would, introduce yourself to our listeners, and then we'll roll into our big question to get us started.
Great. Thank you. Well, I'll kind of start by letting everybody know I have a background not just in HR but also in operations. I've spent my career in the hospitality industry, which is a great industry, and half of that was, you know, in restaurants, in operations as a general manager, and then moved into HR for a variety of different companies. And then almost 4 years ago, started a consulting practice, HR Align Design, and I really work with companies to help them align their people practices with their business results. And that might take a variety of different forms in terms of the work we do together. It could be very tactical or strategic initiatives that are centered around what I call an integrated talent management model. Or in some cases, I've actually, you know, worked as their HR practitioner on a part-time basis, or as one of my clients likes to call me, their HR strategic advisor. But at the center of all my work is really understanding the business, what their particular goals are, and how we can align the work we're doing together to support that. And I've always tried to think of myself, this might be my business background, but I've always tried to think of myself as a business person first with an expertise in HR. And I find myself, you know, anytime I'm talking with other HR practitioners or people that are wanting to get into HR, just kind of singing that mantra and saying, okay, this is really what we need to be as an HR consultant or HR practitioner these days.
Well, and that's, you know, and I think the, I think what's really interesting, and if you're up for it, let's talk a little bit more about kind of your background, the industry you came from, and a little bit, just kind of give a little bit of the history of kind of maybe who you were with and some different things, because I think it's very valuable for everybody to understand before we jump into the conversation. If you're up for it, if not, just say, hell no, Brian, I don't want to talk about that.
No, I'm happy to talk about that. I've had some really great opportunities and worked for some great companies over the years, but I actually graduated from Cornell with a degree in hotel and restaurant management, fell into it a little bit, as many of us do in the restaurant industry, but started working for Houlihan's. Hopefully people remember Houlihan's. There aren't quite as many around these days, but they're still out there. And, you know, one of the big casual dining concepts, one of the original ones really at the time, and I was a general manager for them for really half of my career, quite a bit of time, both in their in Houlihan's, and they also had some seafood restaurants, which were a little bit more upscale dining. So did that for quite a while, and then got to a point where I said, well, you know, what I want to do with the rest of my life, and really was very interested in training, development, and actually went back to school for that, and had an opportunity that came up with Houlihan's to get involved in the training department. So I was really fortunate to make a career transition without having to take too much of a step back, and worked in training with them for a period of time before I actually joined a company called Capital Restaurant Concepts, which was a local boutique restaurant organization based in the D.C., Baltimore area, and they had about 16 different restaurants at the time, 9 different concepts, everything from quick service to fine dining, and really had the opportunity to not just lead but actually create their HR department. And after doing that for a while, I was asked to move to Morton's Steakhouse and moved to Chicago, and was the VP of HR and organizational development for them for quite a while, which was really a great experience. really worked with a great number of people. We got to do some really great work. The company was really growing at the time. And after 7.5 years there, I'm an East Coast girl, and I'm from New York, and had an opportunity to move back actually to New York City, which was really exciting because I've always wanted the opportunity to work in New York. And I was the chief people officer for BR Guest Hospitality, which is another it's a locally based restaurant organization. They have a number of different concepts from seafood, steakhouse, Asian, Mexican, quite a bit. So had a really great opportunity there, and then decided to move into consulting. And still here in New York and enjoying it, loving it.
Well, it's, and you did, like I said, you've been on kind of all aspects of leading, you know, being at the starting point as a practitioner. Obviously, you know, I would say that hospitality in Cornell, I mean, that's one of the top five actual programs in the country for that. Might be the top one. I don't want to show off too much for you, but... But
there's a lot
you know,
of great programs out there these days in a lot of different colleges, yeah.
But it's, you know, great foundation. And so as you progress through being, you know, several years as a practitioner, and now you obviously have clients that you're helping, kind of working with to let that expertise kind of actually help them. So what are you hearing most now from your clients that actually kind of the biggest thing, if you can narrow it down, there might be a couple, that's keeping them up at night?
Well, there's probably a lot of things keeping them up at night, but the one thing that I think has been and will continue to be and is definitely one of the things that I consistently hear from my clients and we work on in a variety of different ways is talent, you know, whether it's finding it, developing it, keeping it. How do you really find the talent that's going to help make your organization successful? So that really just kind of continues to be a mantra from everybody. It's not new news for sure, but I think it will always continue to be something that's going to be top of mind for people. And how do we do that in a great way? You know, the other piece, and maybe this is more from my perspective, is how do we not overcomplicate HR? This might be some of my business background, but I also deal with a lot of startups or smaller companies that are just kind of either getting started, recognizing they need HR, they don't have an HR person, or they need somebody with a little bit more experience, but they're always talking about, well, how do we get this into place and how do we not overcomplicate it? How do we make it simple for the operators to execute on the things that are required in the HR space, but then also how do we create things from an HR or people practice perspective that are going to add value to the business and really focus on achieving business results. So I think those would be the two big areas. A lot to talk about there.
Well, yeah, I mean, but there's always a lot to talk about. I think that's probably one of the bigger challenges within the kind of the talent management, HR, HCM perspective is it's everything, right? It touches everything in the organization, start to finish, heritage to future. The people are the component, right? And when that's really in balance, it's amazing on how much, you know, you can get accomplished, but it's rarely really, really in balance. So, you know, so what do you think, what do you think for an organization to really be healthy on the talent management side, just kind of what's some ideas around just good retention? I mean, I know, let's just talk about some of the basics that you're seeing from potentially with clients, I mean, not the client specific, that where you just think, you know, common sense stuff that maybe just gets missed, right? The simple answers, like just let's revisit some of those. I think the blocking and tackling is probably good to hear for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think some real basic things from an organizational perspective is you want to make sure that you're very clear initially on what are you looking for in talent? Because I think finding great talent or hiring the right talent for your organization is probably the first step towards retention. Because not everybody is going to be happy in your organization, and that's okay. And you're not going to be happy with everybody and their particular skill sets. So you want to really hone in and be really clear about what makes people successful in your organization so you can find the talent that's going to be happy to start with and is going to have a higher likelihood of staying long term. And then I think your next step is, well, how do I make sure that I set somebody up for success? So this whole concept of onboarding or assimilation into an organization, are you making sure that you're giving them all the tools, that you're communicating to them all the basics? You know, how do I, you know, if I'm an hourly employee, how do I time in and how do I do that? Where do I get my paycheck? You know, what's my training schedule look like? Simple basics, but then also at every level in the organization, how do you start people off on building relationships within the organization? How do you start them with building relationships with their peers, with, you know, with leaders in the organization? You know, we spend an awful lot of time at work. It's probably where we spend our most significant amount of time. And, you know, having good relationships there helps people to be more successful and feel more comfortable in their job and look forward to going to work. So I think onboarding is a real significant piece, and it's still an area I don't believe that organizations spend as much time in that arena, because it's not just a day one or the first hour of the job type of initiative. It's something that, depending upon, you know, your role in the organization, could be anywhere from, you know, a week to several months. And I think one of the other things people are also looking for is, you know, is this, you know, what am I going to gain out of this in terms of skills, experience, ongoing development, and is this a home for me? I still think that being able to identify a career path or a development path for people in an organization is something that attracts them. And whether or not they choose to stay with an organization long term, which obviously is your ultimate goal, you want to be upfront and be able to communicate to people, well, kind of, what am I going to gain out of this? And I think also, you know, just things like fair and equitable compensation, recognition and reward, all of those things kind of go into retention.
Well, I know that, and I'm completely, and I'm so glad you said onboarding, because I was able to do a talk to a SHRM chapter in Ohio a few weeks ago, and that's one of the things that, I mean, I shared with them that I think the single biggest gap that can be actually rectified with the least investment, and it just takes a lot of, like, purposeful thought, is onboarding. I think that is the biggest gap right now to the start of pressure against retention, also known as turnover.
Yeah.
Is onboarding. I think onboarding is a, like, people just, it just doesn't, for whatever reason. And part of it is, I think that you have, like, a cultural, and I'll get your take on this. I feel that there's, like, a cultural, or you have stakeholder, like, resistance, because it goes from recruiting to, like, full on, you know, onboarding with the HR department, benefits, you've got IT involved, and then it gets on to management. For the workforce, you know, the workforce management side, so you have more stakeholder hands in the pot than anybody for onboarding.
Yeah, so. I would agree. I mean, there are so many pieces to the onboarding, and to your point, stakeholders that, you know, when organizations miss the boat on that, I think not only does the person joining the organization suffer, but the organization and all the stakeholders suffer as well.
Well, and that's, yeah, and that's so, I mean, I just think for everybody listening, just take a look at how you can onboard. Just do a really, like, well-communicated, that's probably the biggest thing, is if you just do a good job communicating and give people a point of contact as kind of the ripcord. Like, if you're starting to be overwhelmed, there's some place you got a question, or there's, you know, there's an area of concern, here's the person to talk to. And they will help be kind of your advocate to make sure you come into the company the most efficient and have the best experience possible, right? If that was just done in every single company, and that and literally where people would actually just kind of be your, you know, like your new liaison to get you in the company, I really truly think that would take down a level of angst where people start building up a little bit of a resentment day one. They're all excited, and they're not everybody has that same level of energy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's a lot of disappointment day one, and because people are scared and they're excited, and you know, and the energy just doesn't match up, which is all right as long as you manage kind of their expectations and kind of do mirror a little bit of that excitement. I think that's when you get companies, like when people are really excited to come on board is when they feel accepted and people are excited to have them, right?
I think you bring up a really good suggestion about that point of contact. If we think about just the recruiting process, you've got a point of contact with somebody in the recruiting office that you're kind of spending quite a bit of time with during that whole process, and then you know, day one, to your point, you're real excited. You know, you're excited that you've made this decision to join this new company and you're looking forward to the future. And all of a sudden, this relationship that you've had with somebody sometimes isn't necessarily there, and there's nobody to replace that. So there's nobody to go to with all your questions, to your point. And I also think that having that point of contact and really spending some time on day one in particular, you want to validate that I've made the right decision to come join this company. So whether, to your point, the energy is the same level or just the fact that, you know, the company tries to put their best foot forward, makes the person feel welcome. You know, in the hospitality industry, you know, the analogy is, you know, you want to treat people like you're welcoming, you know, them into your home. And what would you think about if you were inviting people over to a dinner party? You know, you want to welcome them. You want to make sure they feel comfortable. They have something to drink. You introduce them to other people that are there at the party. Well, if you use the same analogy on somebody's onboarding and their first day, is you want to make sure that they feel good about being there. They're excited to be there. They have somebody to ask questions, and they feel like they've got a guide through their first couple of days. Because I agree with you, no matter how many times you may have changed jobs or what your level of experience or in the workforce is, you know, day one's always a little nerve-wracking because you just don't know what to expect.
Yeah, and I mean, it's totally, and you articulated it so much better than I, is you have this handoff of relationships where you built trust with somebody and now they're handing it over, right? They're handing over the keys to the trust to somebody else. And I think that gets dropped a lot of times, or it just gets it's underwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really, and you don't know if you're supposed to like rely on the recruiting person. So you're forcing them to start making some decisions without all the information, and nobody likes to do that. That is really, really uncomfortable. So, what else would you like to talk about? And I've got 7 million questions. You got this awesome experience, and we've spent enough time together that I literally am like, okay, I have 7 million questions. We've asked six, you know, I've asked two, so I've got 6,999,000. I got a lot of questions about. So what do you want to talk about?
Well, one of the things as I was mentioning earlier, and I said this is maybe more from my perspective, I think my clients as well, the people I'm working with, is how do we not overcomplicate the HR function? How do we keep it simple and focused on the business and add value to the business? And I think that sometimes, you know, myself included, have created extensive processes or paperwork or what have you when, you know, a much more simpler approach could be taken. And I know specifically, and I would say this is probably true in most businesses, you know, there's a lot about HR that's necessary but probably gets a bad rap because it's complicated. You know, a lot of the administrative piece of it, it's complicated, and there's all these systems and processes that operators have to go through, and that is the least of their desire. You know, they're, at least in the hospitality industry, they're all about taking care of the guest or taking care of the employees, making sure both have good experiences, making sure we're making money. So sitting down and filling out a piece of paper or going through some long drawn out process is the last thing on their list. So the more ways that we can uncomplicate it, make it simple, show the value to the business, including, you know, the things that you have to do from an HR perspective, I think the more often we're going to get the operators as true partners and on our side, and we're we'll be more effective. So I think that's kind of my one of the things I'm usually up on a like to talk about on a soapbox a little bit maybe.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because you come from and my background, and I say it enough that there's probably somebody new listening who doesn't know, my background is also from multi-unit, multi-location mm-hmm. business. It's kind of where I grew up in,
mm-hmm.
so that's kind of near and dear to my heart, and that it's heavy operational. It's very client-facing, internal and external clients, and so keeping it simple, especially the more complex the organization, is absolutely mission critical to be able to stay agile and not get, you know, not get bloated and heavy and not being able to move to keep up with the pace of changes in your marketplaces.
Mm-hmm.
And so simplicity, I mean, simplicity is the key.
I agree with you. And I think I love the word you used, agile, because I think that more and more is kind of a skill set that all of us need to develop, because our organizations need to be agile. We need to be agile because of change. I mean, the work environment is fraught with change and will continue to be so, and we have to be able to be agile learners, be agile in the sense of being able to shift gears very quickly. So, again, the more simple we can make things, the easier it is to display that agility. I agree. I was talking to a client the other day, and we were talking about, you know, what's keeping them up and what's challenging for them at the moment. We kind of got on this subject, and one of the examples we were talking about is kind of just creating process for process' sake. You know, there's a mistake made, or somebody doesn't know how to do things, or somebody just wants to prevent the same thing from happening, and they create another process on top of a process rather than trying to take a step back and saying, okay, why did this really happen, and do we really need this process, or is it just a matter of sitting down and coaching the individual that was involved so that they can make better decisions in the future? So I think if we all, you know, kind of took a step back a little bit more often, maybe kind of paused, we'd probably be making better decisions ourselves in terms of process or, you know, developing the skill sets of the people we're working with a little bit better.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And, you know, but the thing is, it's great to talk about simplicity, but so how do you approach a complex business with and try and make that into the simple themes, right? Because there's some businesses that the nature of the business is complexity, right?
Uh-huh.
It's just not that easy. I mean, some businesses are much easier to like, okay, let's revision this and let's reorganize it, and let's approach it a little bit different framework. But there's some that are just complex, and it's just not that easy to execute on that. So how would you approach that as a consultant or as the leader of kind of the people side of it? How would you approach thinking about that?
Well, there's a couple things, and, you know, I would go back to, you know, talking to a number of people in the organization about, you know, what gets in their way of doing the work of the organization. What is their business? How are they making money? How do they make profit? And what gets in their way of doing that? I think also when you talk to the people really doing the work, more often than not, they can tell you a better, an easier, a more efficient way of accomplishing certain tasks. I mean, in every business, there are always going to be the things you have to do, but I think if you can also identify the value to the business and the why people are doing those things, that's going to be really helpful to more consistently completing it. I also think, depending upon what we're talking about, I think more and more today, there's technology that can help us simplify things or automate processes. And I think that, you know, and sometimes it's expensive, no doubt, but there are definitely some inexpensive solutions out there. And I think the earlier an organization can adopt the use of technology in some key areas, I think the better off they're going to be. If it's an older organization with a lot more ingrained systems and processes, it might take a little bit longer, and you're going to have a lot more resources dedicated towards moving towards a technological solution. But I think when you do the ROI, you're really at the end of the day going to see that over a period of time, it's going to be a better solution for the organization. And I also think one of the things that I think is becoming more and more of a necessary skill set, and sometimes we don't always think about this up front, is this whole concept of collaboration. And I see this more and more, and it's really intriguing to me, particularly from an HR perspective and when you kind of throw the whole social media world in there. In big organizations, I think the more, if we look at the functions and the tasks across different departments in an organization and really ask the question, are we duplicating effort, or if we collaborated with somebody else, if HR collaborated with marketing or HR collaborated with finance more often, what could we maybe streamline or eliminate because there's duplication in effort or there's expertise that can be utilized from another function in the organization that's going to make it easier and faster for me to get this piece of my work done? So I think that's another area that we don't think about as much as we could.
Well, and at the end of the day, it all comes down to, you know, you start talking about collaboration, and that's definitely one of the words that I'm a huge fan of, but it's an interesting word. Because people's gauge of people's perspective on what collaboration is at times is really so dramatically different. Collaboration to one might be them agreeing with what you want to do versus collaboration from another on the other end of the spectrum is they want everybody else to do the work and then to kind of, you know, kind of then weigh in with what the solutions have been presented to them to then make a decision. Two big extremes versus working, you know, kind of the middle of that, you know, middle of that is a different, has a different look to it for sure. So what are some areas that you think are the easiest for people to start creating a collaboration culture?
I think the two I mentioned, I think HR and marketing can collaborate more often. In fact, I recently read an article about maybe thinking differently about both of those functions. And should there be, this is, you know, I'm still wrapping my head around this one myself, but should there be a chief community officer that maybe oversees marketing and human resources when you think about the communities or the, you know, the communities of external guests and the communities of internal guests and the different crossovers that, you know, you're marketing to both worlds and there are different types of recruiting practices, if you will, to both worlds. So it's an interesting thought about how those two functions might join or collaborate a little bit more. And I definitely think HR and finance needs to collaborate even more, because HR and, you know, in terms of speaking the language of business, it's the numbers. And I think the more that the two can collaborate, the more effective they can both be.
Well, Janet, you know what? It is that was probably the fastest 30 minutes I've had in a long time. We are out of time.
It did fly by, but I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
Well, we look forward to getting you back on and hopefully get to see you in the very near future. So everybody, have a great day. Janet, again, thanks for spending lunch for us. It's great to hear your voice. Love your perspective, and I will talk to you soon. Everybody, we're out. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.